All right, let's start. Thank you all for coming to the August 22nd council briefing. We have a handful of topics on the agenda for you tonight. The first one is to discuss fence heights, and I will turn it over to Director Ireland for a little discussion on the memo she put together.
Thank you, Mike. It was, I think, a couple of months ago that it came up at, I believe it was another briefing when we were still virtual, in response really to one particular resident's issue that they're having with a commercial property directly around behind their house and wanting a fence that the code currently does not allow. So I did take a little time to do some research for you guys on what other communities are doing, which you'll see in the table that I attached to the staff report. But essentially what I was looking for was just some comparison in what other communities do in terms of their fence. And this was something we were planning on doing in more detail as part of the LDC update. But since it came up and you guys asked to talk about it, we went ahead and did some legwork on it now. So we looked at, well, let me back up. Our current code allows basically a 6-foot tall fence is kind of the standard for an opaque fence on residential property on the side and the rear yards. Anything past the front face of the house has to be 4 feet. The code does allow 8-foot fences if the top 2 feet are 25% open. So you'll see some fences that have kind of like lattice work on the top of different styles. But that's how you get to the 8 feet. And we've had some folks request, 8-foot solid fence. The code just doesn't currently allow. So one of the things that I looked at was if other communities allowed that and how. So if you look at table one, I looked at Atlantic, Neptune, Cocoa, Ormond, New Smyrna, and Satellite Beach, just because they are oceanfront communities. I thought they may have some different regulations, or just to compare, because we have some unique requirements on oceanfront properties. So some of them, for example, Atlantic Beach does allow 5 to 8 foot, very last column, compatibility buffers. So there are some communities. Cocoa Beach is also one of them where 8 feet is allowed where there's a residential property that abuts to a commercial or non-residential property or multifamily. So there really is a mixed bag on what different communities allow, and I wanted to just provide some of that to you. But because there are other parts of the code, which is why I brought my lovely LDC, you can see what horrible shape it's in because I flip through it all the time. There are some other provisions in the code when it comes to compatibility and landscape buffers and things like that with residential and commercial uses. So making changes really is more than just this section 406 regarding fences. There's some other areas of the code we would need to look at. But wanted to bring this to you guys, get your thoughts on, you know, moving forward with this now or down the road as part of the bigger LDC update. Because again, it is a topic that's touched in multiple areas of the code that we don't want to miss anything or have maybe inconsistencies if we change one thing and miss it in another area, which we unfortunately has happened before. So we don't want to avoid that this time. So interested to hear y'all's thoughts on this topic moving forward.
I'd like to go ahead and try to move forward and get something done. I like Atlantic Beach, Neptune Beach, that between commercial and residential in the back, maybe just specify, I guess on the side wouldn't matter either, but 6 feet or 8 feet in rear with when residential property abuts commercial property with city manager approval, or just like Satellite Beach, I think that goes to up to 8 feet in between residential and non-residential. So I mean, I think if we can solve her problem, you know, and not negatively impact a lot of other people, I'm fine with going ahead and trying to resolve this issue.
Can I ask you why we have the 2 feet that's 25% open?
It's always been
old.
Like that.
I know you
so,
probably
yeah.
don't know why, but
no. I mean, I think it's just to allow for some free flow of air, which is what the code basically says, to allow airflow in those top 2 feet. But again, you know, I don't think there's any issue with allowing it. Obviously, we would prefer it to not be or have to be done through a variance like Atlantic Beach does. So that adds an extra step.
Sure.
I think it can be done administratively. Staff can look and see, okay, it's pretty obvious, residential, commercial, you get the 8-foot fence. So that's pretty straightforward. But we have had other topics come up. 6 foot in the front yard came up on A1A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I feel like we didn't have an opportunity really to investigate that a little bit more like I've done here with doing some research on what other communities might allow. So there are some other opportunities to provide the ability to have a taller fence, and maybe it's, you know, properties with dual frontage where they back up to a street instead of another property. And some of those exist, as you know. So I think there's other opportunities other than commercial, but if that's something you want us to tackle now, we'll go back later. I mean, we already have a laundry list of stuff to you know, address while we're doing the LDC update.
Is the height thing a safety thing for police officers as well, if they're like looking for somebody and being able to like look over a fence and see into the backyard of somebody if they need to?
I mean, I would look at PD on that.
They can get a dog over there if they need to.
I'm not looking over six foot fences, so.
I was told that was the reason was the visual that you can see what's going on.
Yeah, I think.
Some people say you can see over that 6 foot fence.
I kind of like it.
Well,
we allow bushes to go as tall as you want.
Right.
So she thought about planting bamboo.
Or they
I talked to her about trying to do plants, and the other thing is she said with the 2 feet that's partially open with her situation and with the people that seem to be hanging around back behind that building, she feels that's just a place for them to grab onto to get over the fence, and I kind of see that.
So I agree with a lot of what Corey was saying, and I know that you and I have had conversations about decision levels, and I think this is one of those that should fall in your lap to say, all right, well, this is a discretionary item that the city manager could take a look at and say, yeah, in this situation we should have it, and I think we should in this situation, because she's provided enough evidence, at least to me, to suggest that there needs to be something there. There needs to be a clear separation between the commercial properties and her backyard, because it's getting a little out of hand as far as
what I've seen. Just as a reminder, too, and this is where any type of language would need to be legally and creatively written, because the residential does not abut up against commercial. The residential abuts up against a right-of-way that exists behind the commercial property. So we probably need to make sure that the language, I think what we're picking up on is the intent to move forward with something. The question is, what's the right way to legally draft it?
Right.
Knowing that it's not residential against commercial. And so in this instance, there is a right of way in between the two.
But with the 2 foot lattice at top, I mean, you can plant ivy or whatever, and I mean, you cannot get through it. It's pretty solid. So.
I mean, I personally, for kind of convenience purposes for the public applying for fence permits, for it to be administrative within our department and not have to go to the Board of Adjustment like some communities or even to the city manager, but that it would be an administrative thing where we could make that determination, because there's obviously other properties in the city that back up to a commercial, residential properties that back up to commercial.
It's been a couple of years since I've been on the Board of Adjustments, but they were overwhelmed already with variances without
having
to add something like this.
Absolutely, we would not.
Yeah. Why are we putting the cost on the homeowner?
The cost for
the fence, why is it not the property owner of the business required to do something about
My point of saying that there is already a requirement if it immediately butts up to, if a commercial and residential are literally sharing a property boundary, there is a requirement for fencing and shrubbery, and it has to be a certain width. It doesn't apply to the property that this kind of brought this back up again. It doesn't apply to that particular property. Yeah, and it's unique, and there are other houses north of here that back up to commercial, but there's still the alleyway in between. So they kind of would fall into this same weird twilight zone of code where it actually says they have to provide a buffer unless there's a street or alleyway that bisects the property between the two. And that one falls under this. So even if someone under the current code were to build new commercial, they technically wouldn't have to provide the buffer.
That's something we've
I know.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. And that's, that's the thing. There are a lot of those kind of little nuances that we need to look at holistically. But otherwise, obviously, we don't have an issue with 8 feet.
I don't have the issue with the 8 foot in the back, but I don't know how safe she's going to feel if her neighbors have 6 foot, or she's going to want to do the 8 foot between the neighbors as well.
Well, and here's a question. I mean, if we were to change it, could the business, because I've been talking to some people with the business, with this property, because I went out there and the fence looks horrible. I mean, the fence needs
whose
to
fence
be.
Is it?
It's theirs. It's the commercial property. It's the commercial property's fence. It's falling apart. Mm-hmm. Somebody has obviously put boards up there to try to, keep it from falling over, right? Mm-hmm. And I walked up, and I'm 5'7", and I could see over the fence in places. And so I can understand her concern. So I've talked to people that own the property, and they're looking into getting quotes to about replacing the fence, but there's no guarantee. But then my question would be, if we were to do this, could they potentially put an 8-foot fence? Or, you know,
the homeowner?
No,
the
commercial property. Yeah.
Well, again, based on our emails earlier, it's not on their property. In this particular case, in other cases, yes. If it's on their property, then yes.
Their fence isn't on their property.
It's in the right of
way. We think it's either in the right of way or on the private property.
Isn't that problematic, kind of, sort of?
Well, that's where...
It can be.
Heather and I had the conversation about... we could easily do a right-of-way use permit for the commercial property and allow them to install the fence on our property. So if they went down the road of wanting to remove the old fence and installing a new one, we can work with them to make that happen. And at that point, it would be a new 6-foot fence. Under the current code, it would be a new 6-foot fence with a 2-foot lattice work on the top of it for a total of 8 feet.
So why would they have been allowed to put that area behind there in the right-of-way? Is that typical that we allow commercial businesses? Because their building looks like it goes right up to the property line, and that alleyway is essentially right-of-way.
That fence looks like it's been there for a long time.
Yeah, and like I said, the commercial plaza was built in 88, so we don't have any record of who put that fence up. I looked under all the addresses around there.
But can we allow alleyways like that on right-of-way? Behind a commercial property?
There aren't that many, no. And it wasn't originally like that. I didn't have time to dig today just to find out when that was deeded over to the city as an alleyway. The commercial plaza does have permission through a permit through Public Works to have their dumpster there. Otherwise, their building does almost go up to their property line, but then there's another 16 or so feet of city property that mm-hmm. separates them from the residential property. But again, just keep in mind, any code changes we're going to make will apply to the whole city. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, there's no problem on our end with 8-foot fences where there's
the
residential adjacent.
The property owner, because if she's having this problem, everybody else along that fence is having the problem.
I would imagine so. Yeah. Well,
as long as it's against that commercial property, then that's fine. But to the point that you made, if she doesn't have a problem with the neighbor behind her, it's not commercial property. Too bad you get a 6-foot fence back there.
Utilities. Yeah, and again, that's where we're going to have to look and see, well, where in the code do we need to change it so that it's a, there's kind of two different things. A requirement of a commercial property owner if it is immediately adjacent to residential, and or do we want to also provide the ability of residential properties to put that fence up themselves? So in this case, the way the code is, we can't require the commercial property to do it because it's not on their property and they don't fall into the requirements. But I think it was Cocoa Beach, they do allow residential properties to actually put up an 8-foot fence. Should they choose to do so. The requirement's 6 feet, but if you're a residential property, you can do the 8 feet and pay for that yourself. So again, there's a lot of different pieces of the code that kind of touch on this that we would need to take a look at. Some of it's in the landscape section of the code and then the fence section.
I lean more towards having the property owner do it for uniformity. And then you got the two neighbors on each side. Are you really going to feel safe if you have an 8-foot, they have a 6-foot, or a dilapidated 6-foot?
And you're referring to a pure commercial against residential?
With a right-of-way, without a right-of-way, with an alley, and not recommended, but more of the, it's required that
yes.
they do it. I would say that property owners would have to put up that fence.
Commercial property owners or residential?
Commercial.
You're saying property owners. I didn't know what you
meant. Yeah, the commercial property owners.
Okay.
Because if the goal is to have a higher, if the ultimate goal is to have a higher fence between that alley and the right-of-way versus the residents, just one resident doing it isn't going to fix it.
But we can't go back and tell the commercial property to put an 8-foot fence in, can we?
Not on our property.
On our property.
No, and in this instance, no, because it's not on their property.
Right.
So requiring them to do it would also say, but you're also required to get a revocable encroachment permit from Public Works, and if Public Works says, sorry, we can't give it to you because there's a gas line that runs under there or some other reason, then what do we do? Tell them they have to do something that they may not be able to do.
Well, it sounds to me like this is pretty much an anomaly, though, that there's not...
There's not that many that are separated like this, where there's commercial and alley and then residential. Most of them either are right up against it, or there's some other use as a buffer between, like maybe multifamily, or it's across the street, for example. So I didn't look to see how many properties that this would necessarily impact, but if we do go towards making changes, we can try to look and see.
I would assume how every property might. That goes against any of those plazas.
On Penman, yes, there will be more. There's some also in the over by, can't remember the name of the plaza, Pablo Plaza on 3rd Street where Whole Foods is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called. So there's residential that backs right up to that. And there's other areas. We just.
4th Street behind where Salt Life and all that is.
I'm fine with the homeowner paying for the fence. I mean, if they're the ones that want it and it's changing, then, you know, I don't have a problem with them paying for it. I don't think we should put it in the.
Well, in this situation.
Well, in this situation, yeah.
Right.
She wants to do it. So.
Right. Yeah.
I know she's convinced that an 8-foot fence is going to solve all her problems, but when she started rattling off all of the different issues, I was like, an 8-foot fence is only going to solve some of these problems. And it really sounded to me like there's some code enforcement issues at this particular shopping center. You've talked to them.
So the guy that I spoke to this afternoon, he said apparently they've done a lot. One of the issues they had was the vagrant was living in the dumpster.
Yeah.
Behind, so on her end, there's apparently two dumpsters. There's one at where Pim and Diner is and one on the other end. And this vagrant was living behind the dumpster. And apparently they were getting stuff from St. Vincent de Paul. And they had a little apartment set up back there. And so they apparently have talked to JBPD and asked for them to have a watch or do a watch or whatever of the property and that sort of thing. So, and they've, you know, it sounds like they've been trying to do things to address it, but.
So when she kept saying, you know, same person, it's this person.
It was probably that one is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I looked at it back when she sent her first email and haven't been back since, but. Back then there was evidence of a lot of transient activity back there behind there. And it could have been just him and his buddies. I don't know, you know, but there was plenty of evidence of it back then. And the fence was dilapidated then. So I think it will probably resolve the greater portion of her issues. Maybe not all, but it'll really help out a lot.
Sounds like I'm hearing a consensus to move forward with some language to allow the 8-foot fences.
Yes.
You got the direction you need?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that was item one. Let's move on to item two, Gonzales Park update, and also seeking some direction regarding pickleball. So I'll turn the floor over to Jason.
Major display for the council.
Show and tell.
Just like a major award.
So at our budget meeting, we brought this up, and council asked us to bring it back to a briefing so we can discuss. And essentially, we're asking, should we stick with two planned pickleball courts on the original design or add another two, because we've had a lot of demand. I'm sure council remembers the young lady that came and spoke, very advocating for the four. In our opinion, I think that it does make sense when you look at the overall objective of what we're trying to do at Gonzales, and that is, if I remind council, to bring activity that would help reduce the vagrancy issues. This concept was the one before the final, so it's not really the final. I think the only thing that changed was the track coming inside. But as you can see, so we've got two pickleball courts. We could remove the volleyball court and easily add two more. Or if we left the volleyball court, we could encroach somewhat into the playground area. This playground area is about three times the size of the current area there. So we feel there's plenty of room to add the two. It does make sense in terms of what we're trying to achieve in the park. Council did mention that parking could be an issue. When you look at four pickleball courts, it's not a whole lot of additional cars. We did increase the parking around the perimeter of this, so we don't think that would be a factor in that. And so we want to leave it with council. Should we go with two and leave it as is, or entertain moving to four courts?
And so if you decide to move forward with four courts, input of which amenity we reduce would also be appreciated.
Does it have to impact an amenity, another amenity? Is there any way to do it without, because it looks like there's some green plated space between the basketball court and that sidewalk, if there's, I would just wondering.
What are you going to take away from the kids, Corey?
I would take away the volleyball court and let that.
I didn't think there was going to be any impact to existing amenities, was my hope. Is there any way to...
I think the impact, if we left the volleyball court and we added two pickleball, the impact to the playground would be minimal.
Right. Okay.
Well, the way that's drawn, so I went and I looked at all the pickleball courts
they're
in the area,
attached.
And they're all like right next to each other. Mm-hmm. And so I was envisioning that the four would just be one big square, or rectangle, right?
Yeah.
And is that what you were thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I would say if we're going to sacrifice anything, we can leave the volleyball court for the beach, you know, and that would be the thing I would remove, not the playground. Living that close to it and attending that park and watching that park, I go by it almost every day. The playground's used heavily, quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think that's probably one of the biggest amenities, that one in the basketball court currently, yep, as it stands today.
Yep.
Of course, there isn't a volleyball
court. And the ball field.
A lot of use. Yeah.
The three volleyball courts at South Beach are used a lot.
They are.
Yep.
Although I was there on Sunday and there was nobody using the volleyball, which was interesting.
That use it. And that they
and that's, a, the that's an opportunity for them to go to South Beach and use the volleyball courts. So that would be my recommendation, is to eliminate that. Have the four pickleball courts. I think that the demand's bigger.
Well, you can also do them two and two. That third row of trees right to the those trees, can those be, a couple of those be removed to get enough space? You know, just from that, it would look to me like...
You say take these trees out, slide these two further this way.
Yeah, maybe put those trees like right up against the basketball court, like in that green area by the basketball court, or find another place for them.
Mm-hmm. I thought you meant turn them this way.
Yeah,
because
they
turn. Switch them this way, you can go 2, 2, 2, 2.
Right.
But I'm just saying,
you can't turn them.
Maybe take these five, but there's a certain amount we have to get. Take these five and put them right here.
Facing,
and then these can go two.
East-west, yes. Got it.
And the pickleball courts can go.
Oh, I see.
They don't have to
that
be,
was my next
question. They should be four in a line. They can be two and two.
Right.
So you'd be removing that. If we kept the volleyball court, you'd have to remove that pergola and encroach into the playground. Is that correct?
I think what I'm hearing Mr. Nichols say, that there could potentially be the addition of two extra courts without losing an amenity. And I'll certainly, mm-hmm, if that's the direction council goes, we could ask the designer to come up with something then.
And my understanding is there's a potential that outside funds will be donated to pay for the pickleball courts, where the other amenities, not that I'm saying I don't want the other amenities, but there will not be donations for the other ones, right? So, I mean, or are there?
So, I'd say it like this, Mr. Nichols. We didn't put in, I don't think, in the memo, the financial impact, because if we add two, there is a potential that we can have those donated,
yes,
for the entire four courts with fencing and everything. The other thing that we are working diligently on is to look for outside funding in terms of granting,
yes,
grant funds, and then also to have help from community to raise funds. Mm-hmm. Something like if we put a fence around the playground, we can sell pickets and things like that.
So I was at Donner, and it's like they had all four of them were just in one area, which I guess was maybe a tennis court that they converted or something.
Right. At Donner, You have four.
You do have four, that's right.
And
yeah.
And then you have like a square with four,
yeah,
two and
yeah,
two.
That's
at
true.
Donner you have
just four
the square,
and
four across, yeah.
Yeah. So I was just saying, I mean,
it works,
as a pickleball player,
is there
a problem with either?
No.
Okay.
Are you called players, or is there like a special term?
Oh, sorry.
Are you trying to make it?
Is that the wrong term?
Learn more about
picklers.
A pickler.
I have no idea.
I do want to try it now since I went out there and checked it out. It's kind of like, yeah, I think I need to give this a try.
I mean, it's all eight. I mean, there's people out there from
yeah.
seven
yeah.
or eight to 90.
Oh, I didn't see that young, but.
So are we still talking about pickleball or what? I have another comment, but it's not pickleball.
Yeah, if there's no impact, if we can figure out a way to do it without impacting any other amenities or just very minor impact, then, but I wouldn't want to like remove another, the volleyball or anything that was necessary.
I understand.
You're all good with that? Moving in that direction?
If it's pickler. Feasible, yeah. If we had to remove an amenity, I'm choosing the volleyball. Yes. First.
But no, but I'm saying, but I'm thinking no lights.
And those are
Corey.
No lights. Okay.
It's residential. Right. You don't want. I don't think you want lights there.
Okay. Because I noticed Jarbo had lights.
Yeah.
I think Donner had lights.
Yep.
Yeah.
Donner, yeah.
And I was
that
like,
people
at Donner, but two people at Donner, you'll drive by there and people playing at midnight. Because you can just go turn the lights on there, which I just turned off. Jarbo is shut off at 9:03.
Oh. So you know where Donner is? In Atlantic Beach.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Are we still talking about pickleball?
No.
Okay, so I'm still concerned, because I know you said there's more parking, but people park on 10th, like when there's a game or practice or something. So that parking's all going to go away with that bike path. And I guess, do we have the most modern plan? Because it's got trees all
yes.
along the outside, too. So while our net official parking spots are increasing, the unofficial spots are going away. So just...
Yeah, I park on 10th Street the times that I've played kickball.
But I mean, a lot of it is also, yeah, we don't want people parking in the neighborhood, but this is supposed to be more of a neighborhood park.
I know what it's supposed to be.
But
I'm
if you add more pickleball courts, it's not going to be a neighborhood thing. It's going to be a team, a league.
A destination.
Well, and that's why we're back here for direction.
And right. people could park parallel along the street, but they just pull right up to the split rail fence and just park.
Well, and if there's four courts, is that really enough for a league?
No.
Okay.
Well,
because
I wouldn't foresee us wanting to ever have leagues there.
Yeah,
anyway.
Okay.
This is
okay.
a practice
Donna,
facility.
Yeah.
Well, because I will admit that when Verna said that there's 100 people waiting on Saturdays to play pickleball, I was like, oh,
is,
that's not
that
good
is,
for Gonzales,
Sunday,
I don't
Sunday
think.
Sunday morning really early when there's a certain group that gets out there.
But we don't want that in
no.
Gonzales.
Is there a group on Facebook?
There are multiple
yeah, there
groups
is.
On Facebook.
Yes.
And there are groups that want these courts so they can have a beaches.
I keep trying to change the subject.
Pickleball.
Yeah.
So that if this is going
well,
to be
there...
this is going to become a draw for this park. I'm not going to be sitting here when the neighbors are all complaining about parking and noise and all
but
that stuff.
At South
so.
Beach, at South Beach, you have to like pre-reserve them and stuff, so they really don't get. They get played,
so
there's no one waiting around.
I hear the mayor's concern about the parking. From what we've seen at South Beach, pickleballers generally are there in the morning.
Picklers.
Okay. And in the afternoon, this park kind of transforms to the athletic field. You've got the kickballers and the lacrosse and softball and that. And you know, if we can have that component in the morning, that helps the vagrancy.
Yeah.
And in the morning, if you drive by, there's plenty of parking. The other thing that the designer put there was parking for golf carts.
Yeah.
So I just don't see it an issue now, and I don't think with four courts that you know it'll become a destination. I think.
Now it could be an issue in the evening though, when you have everybody competing. Because I was talking to some people that play pickleball, and they said, well, you know, the busiest times are in the morning and in the evening, and then on Saturdays, and so you know there may end up being some competing for. You know, parking at that point, because you're going to have kids on the ball field, you're going
to
have...
At that point, I hope that it would regulate itself, that those evenings they'd go to South Beach, you know, let the park... I mean, that's the ideal, you know, that it would kind of regulate itself, but who knows until we get there.
Right.
I think it looks great. I'm excited about it. When's construction? When do you think construction's going to begin? Q1?
One of calendar year 2023,
yeah.
So we're hoping to get the final plans drawn now pending this discussion, and then out for bid this quarter, the final quarter of this calendar year.
Okay,
so
awesome.
Then, yeah.
Wonderful. Any other thoughts or comments on Gonzales, either pickleball courts or parking?
You want to join pickleball team?
Okay, you got the direction you need.
Come on, Chris, let's go give it a try.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
You got there all the time.
No. I'm all set on hobbies.
Which then takes us to the final item.
Crochet.
The special events policy revisions.
Yay, anticipated. Hi.
Turn the floor over to Molly on this one.
Did you just have a birthday?
I did.
Happy
birthday. It's Leo season. So I'm here tonight because we are working to amend our special event policy. We brought that to you last August in a briefing, and we did get some suggestions from you. We do plan to completely dismantle our current policy as it has been Frankenstein together over the years and make a more clear, cohesive document. But last time we spoke, we were kind of at the 50,000 foot level. We want to dial it in. We compiled your suggestions and we provided some recommended language for the new policy. So we just want direction from you. Make sure that we're all on the same page. See if you have any further suggestions for us.
I had a question for you. The Hildervat event that we have on the beach that has all the equipment that's set up on the beach. You know, I was reading, which one? One of these. Oh, number three. And it says the only permitted special events on the beach are surf contests, walk and or run events, and volleyball and soccer tournaments. So what is that considered, the Hildervat event? Because to me,
it is one of those obstacle course type events.
It kind of made me wonder, does it fit in this list of things that we said are allowed?
Do we have soccer tournaments on the beach?
We do have soccer tournaments. That is something that was just a recommended idea. I don't know how we
can make an exception for that particular event.
Yeah.
I mean, because it is unusual when you look at the categories that we have there. So mm-hmm. We can make an exception to include that.
We were more so addressing, we have had some event producers ask to put stages on the beach and mm-hmm. have larger musical type productions. So we're more so trying to limit that rather than the physical activity.
There's a huge list for this topic, but I left it at home on my computer, which I'm upset about. The first issue provided an option to occasionally increase the maximum length of events in order to entice higher quality events. I'm not opposed to that. One of them was talking about the ticketed events. So on the ticketed events, it said that it would have to go, for an exception, it has to go to the council. The problem, if you're going to sell tickets to an event, a promoter has to lock up this person way ahead of time, like a year ahead of time. And so it's a non-refundable deposit. So if they come to council and ask for an exception and the council says no, then there's too much risk. So we're never going to get a good person in there to be able to sell tickets. So there's that was one of the issues. On the events where they are completely selling tickets and it's not free, I personally would just want to know what the challenge is with liquor at those events as opposed to just beer and wine. And I think we're getting away from the fake liquor stuff or something. Yeah,
there it is.
I was hoping to avoid it.
Well, so it starts to turn into a security problem.
Sure.
And right now, we are maxed out at the abilities and capabilities we have to cover all the events, cover all the exits, and ensure that all of the public safety needs are met. It's hard to ensure that we have that if we start to expand the scope of the alcohol events any further than we already have.
I was kind of looking at it like St. Augustine Amphitheater, that if you have an event that someone's paying a high dollar ticket amount to attend and it's not free, and those drinks are 10, 20, 50 bucks a piece, or whatever that they are, I don't think it's, especially if that money's going to a nonprofit, then, I personally don't have much of a issue with that, because I don't see a lot of issues with the way St. Augustine Amphitheater runs it. And if you're there to drink and get drunk, you're gonna be slamming beers or whatever. So I understand the concern, but to me, alcohol is pretty much alcohol.
But you're assuming that we are anything like St. Augustine Amphitheater, and we totally are not.
If you get in an act with a promoter that is trying to make money,
setup wise, we are not designed the same way St. Augustine Amphitheater.
If you're gonna sell tickets and make it a seat
at the event, I have an issue with that as well. I would say no ticket sales that get approved by council. How we have it now is that we went through this back and forth, and Jason remembers. That the whole selling of tickets for the whole space, if a promoter has to go to council, promoters know certain council members and they will have an advantage over others. So everybody is not having an equal opportunity to be able to host an event where they sell tickets to the whole event. Certain ones will, Sam, Corey, Phil, they have the council's ear where Joe, we don't know Joe, doesn't. And so there's an unfair advantage for people to use public space for personal profit.
Can I just give a quick contrary example really quick? Because we've been approached by someone who wanted to do a boat show.
Yep.
And they were not selling alcohol at all, but so they only were going to be able to have ticketed revenue. So it's going to be high end, have all these boats set up out there on the property, and you could walk around on the outside, but you couldn't come inside without being ticketed. So it wasn't even necessarily a promoter or a concert, because I could see where that would be something we might want to entertain.
See, now that would be, so if you wanted to say you do a ticketed event, no alcohol. It's a simple thing. No alcohol if it's fully ticketed. Well, there's plenty of bars around.
Or I'm fine with it not even coming to council or have the administration make a decision on, what can be done in a certain number a year or something. I mean, making an exception to try to get a, if we're going to try to get a high level act, it's just not going to work this way. But if we don't want that, that's fine too.
2005 for the Super Bowl, wasn't that area shut down as well? Wasn't there a party?
Yes.
Yes.
So ESPN had the
was there liquor?
Plaza. It was a old tinted from stem to stern, but if you remember, we had countless other jurisdictions coming in to work, mutual aid, and equivalent to the air show. As a matter of fact, I did the planning for the Super Bowl that year, and when I turned over, or I thought I was turning over the plans to the air show, I ended up getting stuck doing the air show because I had planned the Super Bowl. So it was the same level event of having the Super Bowl that weekend was the same effort that it takes to put on the air show.
Well, let me ask you this. If you had a ticketed event, could you reach out to JSO for 1060, for off-duty officers or our sister cities? Or is that not hard to come by, or are they locked
our
up?
Our sister cities... No, that's not covered under our
mutual
aid agreements because
just JSO.
Just well, obviously JSO. This is part of the county, so they fall right in. And they do cover several jobs for us, and they could. But now you're mixing and matching officers working different events and things. The big ticketed event, I think, and forgive me, but as far as the business strategy goes, obviously it's not our place to tell anybody about business strategy. Whether you're selling $50 drinks, one $50 drink, or five $10 drinks, or $51 drinks, mm-hmm. business strategy is not our game. Public safety is, and whenever you start to have the larger footprint that you have, as far as the bigger acts, the more security it's going to take. the more other agencies that it's going to take as far as public works. It's going to take a whole huge lift as far as other concerns, electrical, you know. Now you're talking about fire marshal exits and everything else, and if you know, whenever you start talking about that area, even though it's wide open, if once you make it a ticketed event, you have to put up railing and
yep.
fencing and everything else, and then that starts to take into the fire marshal having exits. Then you have to have security personnel,
yep.
especially all those events are going to want to have alcohol, so now you have to have security people plus police officers. The bigger event's going to have police officers backstage. I mean, it's just, and to right. your point, it's not exactly the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Yeah. It is a little different. It's made to be, right now as it stands, kind of, we felt like it, that 50% wide open family pre-event and 50% sales keeps us as a city from having that huge public safety concern of a massive concert, a Kenny Chesney, or somebody that's going to take a lot of public safety resources and demand those. I mean, it wouldn't, like you said, that's somebody that's going to have to be booked way in advance. So is it doable? Sure. We can do anything that y'all need us to do, but it's...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, didn't we talk about doing a trial run, maybe of one, and see how it goes, and if it doesn't go well, never do, not mm-hmm. do another one. I thought, yeah. I don't know. I thought we had talked about that, mm-hmm. but also I don't like the insinuation that, you know, council members are going to be influenced by outside people. I mean, you might think that, but I think that your expectation as a council member is going to do what's in the best interest, not to satisfy other people. I mean, I think you can't make that assumption, especially a future council member.
No, but I can make the assumption of what is the purpose of the downtown area. And the downtown area was for families. We heard in our visioning sessions that families want to go down there. And large concerts with alcohol and ticketed events takes it away from the community and gives it to visitors and an influx of people that we've heard over and over again that we don't really want.
Well, we also feel like we have an underutilized amphitheater that could probably host B ticketed events, not Kenny Chesney. I would consider him an A ticket, but something a little bit, you know, lesser. But
is it underutilized? Because it seems like we've got something going on every weekend.
We can't go breast there.
Well, I'm not saying that we're not. I'm talking about the amphitheater itself, what its purpose and design is for, not just having an event there.
In regards to I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But that is the purpose, is to have events to use that. And it's used often.
The open space, yes.
But we don't always have to be using the amphitheater, so we don't need to have.
I'm not saying we always have to. I'm just saying it's underutilized, and we probably should look at that.
But we can look at other ways to utilize it.
Well,
it
sure.
It doesn't always necessarily have to be a
sure.
concert. It could be
an art
show. It could be open mic night. Things that are more community focused versus.
Or more local to me, because it seems to me like the big events, like the Kenny Chesney events and that sort of thing, to me that doesn't feel like we're. I mean, maybe we are supporting local people, but. It's just so big. It doesn't seem.
What's our community that would be
financially supporting businesses and people that own businesses and work here and work in bars and restaurants?
Well, but we've also heard from the bars and restaurants that the people don't go there.
I think if you do it early enough and everything's over at 9 or 10, people are going to go somewhere and do something, and they're also going to stay in the hotels.
So the last time we went through this. With the last iteration, we had businesses and bars and restaurants complaining when there were those events downtown because they were dead. Everyone went to the event, drank as much as they could, and you get the real drunk ones afterwards.
It's a festival style, everything's for it. People that are going to ticketed events, they're not, I just don't see it the same way. I think, they come in town, they stay for the weekend. You can do something else later in the weekend, but it brings people into the community that wants to spend money.
There's festivals that draw a lot of people. And being in the industry for a long time and being where I'm at right now, there was a I can't remember what year this was, 2017, 2018. There was a country singer that came, and he was up and coming. And he played at TPC, but right after he came in here, blew up. Anyways, what I was trying to say is that many people were down here, and then when he was playing for that 1 hour, everyone went to go see him. And as soon as he was done, everyone stayed, some left, but we did get busy. I remember walking around that night, and it was busy. So for me, festivals, regardless of what it is, doesn't make a difference. Now I know the souvenir shops, like the ones next to the old Blue Water, I know when there's a festival, they don't get that many sales. So I don't know.
Well, where. Freebirds used to have ticketed events there, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Didn't they?
Yeah, it was concert venue.
Right. But there were B-line type musicians that would come.
Or old musicians. That
same thing.
Okay, I would put them down.
Did you have a lot of problems out of Freebirds?
No, but they're a very small venue, and
right.
You know, Kenny Chesney played there.
I was just gonna say.
I mean, there have been a lot of big folks that have come in there, but they come in very quiet. They're not. It's a typically used to be a surprise. It wasn't. It wasn't a big known thing. They didn't sell tickets for that night specifically for Kenny Chesney. It was, hey, Kenny Chesney's coming in tomorrow night. Can you get six officers?
Right.
And so it was a last minute, non-advertised thing. So
we can build a promoter for that kind of thing. Yeah, we should.
But we don't want to. You don't have the police.
Well, they do in town.
If you're going to bring an A-list artist. Yeah. The ticket's going to be started at 100, 200. I mean, it is going to be, people are going to pay a lot to go see this, and those are not the people that are causing the problems that you're describing in my eyes.
So, and again, from a business strategy standpoint, that's not our game.
Sure.
But the public safety obligation doesn't change depending on who the customers are.
Sure.
Our responsibility is to this city and to everybody that comes to visit. So if it's people paying $100 for a ticket or $5 for a ticket, our obligation from the police department is the same. So, and our expectation, I would assume from all of y'all, is the same, that we protect all of those people, all the city assets, and make sure that everybody comes and goes in an orderly fashion, no matter who's here. And that's the piece that starts to be problematic with the more you draw in, the harder it is for us to
provide. But if it is a ticketed event, it will have a limit to the number of tickets that can be sold, as opposed to having some of these events that are free and there's no limit to the number of people that come down there.
Yes, sir. There is that.
So I think you can cap the number of people that are going to be showing up.
You don't think people would just show up?
Not if you have a fan,
but they're
more than that. Well, but you'll have the fans. Are you looking at this being ticketed as well? Latham Plaza? Are you looking at this whole big L being ticketed? Because if you hit Kenny Chesney, I guess, is he still
ticketed? Yeah.
Okay.
So not as big as pickleball, though.
I know. Well, maybe he's had Kenny Chesney playing pickleball.
Oh, my.
Maybe he was a pickler.
I think the seat would be in the amphitheater lot. And I think in this side, it would block off, and that's where you'd have food. You'd have the sales. I mean, they wouldn't sit there because.
But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about ticketed things and people showing up.
How does the landing work? Because they've done free concerts.
One conversation at a time, please.
Yeah.
No. If you guys want to finish up yours, and then we'll jump over to Fernando.
Oh, we disagree with this.
Yeah, people won't show up just to stand outside of the amphitheater.
Can I be after Fernando?
The landing. Free. Free, they do the free festivals, and I've been to a lot of them, and they have liquor. Have you looked at how they?
Cause I haven't. Have you heard anything from JSO?
You talking about in years past?
No, I'm talking about now that the landing's gone, that big green
field. They have like a spring concert
space.
Series.
Yeah.
No, the long, I thought you were talking about the old landing.
Not the old landing. Well, I mean, I still call it a landing, yeah, but no. That big green field.
I haven't heard anything in regards to the new green space, but I do know that.
Because I know we do just beer and wine, and I've always been fine with it. Right now, if a promoter wants to come in and throw a festival Saturday, Sunday, and wants to throw liquor, I'm still 50-50. 50 yes, I wouldn't mind seeing it. 50, the other 50%, I think about public safety. So that's where I stand. Now I'm just asking, how is the city of Jacksonville doing?
So what's in the code? I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
And as far as the difference between beer, wine, liquor, any of the distilled spirits, alcohol is alcohol at the end of the day. There is a difference in the rate of consumption that you, obviously you know that. But our biggest thing is it's not so much the type of drinks, it's the public safety issue that the alcohol events cause. So it's not so much that the difference between beer or bourbon, it's the fact that you have four exits, I have to have four officers, plus a rover, and we have to have all the other different things that we have to have in place. So it's not so much the, I wouldn't concentrate so much on the, as a recommendation, what the drink is. It's the fact that it's an alcohol event. Does that make sense?
Now, the ticket events, we've had some festivals where they just, like, they'll have a VIP area, right? Mm-hmm. And it was...
Yes, half the area can be ticketed.
So that's what they're doing now. They're calling it a VIP area, and they're taking the front 50% and selling tickets for that area. And then the last half of Seawalk Pavilion is free. And so that's the way business is being conducted right now, correct?
And there's a max capacity for that ticketed area, correct?
Right. The fire marshal has a computation, and depending on what they have set up, what size of tents and restrooms and all those different facilities that are in the VIP area, depending on what, how much area is taken up in there, what the max capacity can be.
Wouldn't you just do that for the whole area if the whole thing was ticketed?
Yes, sir. I mean, if you change the policy the way it read, yes. I mean, that could be done, yes.
Because I usually don't see the VIP section really getting utilized as much as the free section in back. Because the quality of the artists that are coming are something that somebody's going to pay to see, typically.
That depends on the festival.
Yes,
thank you. Okay, so the comments that I have on number one, is it possible, this might be a nutty idea, to say 48 hours instead of two consecutive days? And the reason I say that is because some like to start with a Friday afternoon. Like if they started on Friday at 7 and ended Sunday at 7, is that something we would be able to consider?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just a thought. Like I said, that might be crazy. I already said on number two, on the boat show example, I'm sure there's others, that just happens to be the one that was brought to my attention. On number three, I wonder if we could just say athletic events such as, and maybe just do two or three examples instead of trying to be all inclusive. And then on number four, just because.
What was your comment on number three again?
Athletic. I call it athletic events. Number four, income statement and balance sheet prepared by a certified public accountant. I only have one document prepared by a certified public accountant each year, and it's a 990, which wouldn't give you any details on income and expenses. So that's a big ask for that requirement there. So I wonder if we can't modify that somehow. Maybe they have to get it notarized or somehow swear that it's accurate. I don't know what the answer is, but to call a CPA and ask them to do an income and expense on an event would be a strange request of a CPA. I think we brought this up last time, city contracted events, I think whatever it was, you could only be a nonprofit to do it, but then you said, unless the associated group is a registered, aren't they already required to be a 501c3? Isn't that repetitive?
I think that's tied to the alcohol sales.
Are the city contractors and the co-sponsors different?
No,
it's the same thing.
Yes, they are required to be a 501c3. Okay,
so
we don't need to say unless they're a 501c3 because they already have to be one.
Yes.
Then in this one, where we have, where we say city will not approve a non-city produced special event or festival on a city recognized holiday, can we add in the city contracted events? Because for example, the Rhoda Martin Center did the MLK event, which we must have granted them an exception to the rule.
You did, yes.
So can we just, if it's a partner event that we're already like in together with them, just, and they weren't, they ended up not being a city partner event.
They weren't.
So they were completely third party.
Yes.
So I just think that that would be somewhere where we'd want some leniency, give ourselves some leniency for an event. I think having an MLK event down there is very appropriate, something we'd want to see.
Allowing special events on a holiday when it's in partnership with the city.
Yeah. Or with city manager approval, but there should be some sort of access to doing an MLK event in the pavilion.
You all good with that one?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we're only looking at MLK, so what about 4th of July?
I think that, I mean, if we go into partnership with another group to do an event, and it's a 4th of July event, then we should be able to let them do the
event.
Wasn't
there something down the 4th of July?
Yeah,
I believe first 2 years of Charlie.
Yes, I remember that.
We read the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I remember that. I was there for that.
Always?
Yeah, and they had the Navy Band. It was a great event. I don't know why we stopped doing it.
In regards to number one, with the 48 hours, I think our intent that we discussed with staff is, if you use the verbiage of 48 hours, that drags the possibility out to 3 days. So it's 3 days worth of commitment. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a 3-day festival versus two.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do here.
Okay.
Exactly.
What is the impact on staff?
Right.
The impact on us is it's a larger like public safety commitment. It's one more day of staffing and
one more day of not getting a day off. Because you have to be,
well,
because they have to work extra hours.
Right, and I mean that's any of the days that we're staffing a special event, if it's 5 hours or 10 hours or 12 hours, it's staffing those days that, with officers that are off duty. So it's requiring those officers to commit to a festival to work.
Well, the way this reads, sorry, Commander, but this would be specifically for a special event and not a festival. Is that how I'm reading that?
Well, it would be a 3-day. It can turn into a 3-day instead of a 2-day, which is what a festival is.
Right, but typically with a special event, it becomes a festival when there's alcohol involved. So if we're talking specifically about special events, I don't know that we would need as much police
action. Okay, so it would be a 3-day non-alcohol event.
Yes.
Such as a boat show.
Okay. Are you wanting specifically festivals as well?
That was my thought.
Okay.
Well, then we run into the problem of staff. What we're trying to do here is fully utilize our assets without having the capacity to be able to do it in a safe way. Yeah, we can have concerts down there all the time, but we don't have the policing for it. We don't have the infrastructure for it. So unless we want to dump a whole bunch of money into the police department, like Jacksonville has, over 50% of their budget is going to JSO, I don't think we can do big things down there, unless you guys really want 50% of the budget.
Commander, let me ask you this.
Here's my, hang on a second. Can you guys let me finish my notes on this? But just to that, you could have full day Saturday and full day Sunday, or you could have a little bit of Friday and a little bit of Sunday. I'm just redistributing the 2 days that you could have.
Right,
so it's technically another day, but also they're paying for the police officers, so they're paying for that overtime police officer.
Right, but the police officers are not getting a day off. They're getting paid, but they're not
getting a day off. That's another issue, but the two day, I'm just redistributing the 2 days. So I get what you're saying. It doesn't change my opinion on that idea. The alcohol sales on number five, I definitely like this verbiage. What I don't like is when they have things that appear to be liquor that aren't. So they've got, like, people are paying $24 for a pineapple. You guys all know how I feel about the pineapple. It's fraudulent to me because people are paying it thinking that there is rum in that pineapple. So I don't know if we care about that or if that's just a me thing. And if it's just a me thing, then I'll concede. I do thank you for number six. I completely agree. And I think you were probably quoting me when you said it was a Frankenstein policy, because I really do think it's just a little bit of a mess. I don't support liquor sales. I do support keeping it beer and wine. I don't support $100 concert tickets, but I do think there are opportunities to bring in events that we want that would be fully ticketed events, and we need to give ourselves an avenue for that. And I do think, and I don't know if you have, I think we need to talk to some of the promoters who are doing quality events that are the kind of events that we want down here, and let them give us their feedback on, one for one, just they're going to say it's very confusing and it's hard to navigate, but two, what changes could be made and what would the results be, good and bad? And I think you've got some people out there that would give you their honest feedback.
Definitely.
Good, bad, and ugly, and not just to whatever would be to their own advantage. Yeah.
So what if we allowed a small number of ticketed events to start with, just to see how that goes?
So can I just interject, if I may? Mr. Nichols brought it up in the beginning. You know, we were talking about the A-list and that type, and you need to give them a lot of time. I think our intent by suggesting the verbiage that we bring it back to council is because what we see is our calendar is pretty much the same from year to year. It's not often that we get events that, you know, don't fall into this category. So it wouldn't be any harm to the producer to say, okay, you fill in. Typically, it's a 90-day process. You know, most of the events are booked in a year in advance. So that would give us plenty of time to bring it to council to make those decisions. And I think if we leave it more broad-based so that those decisions can be brought to you guys, I don't think you'll be overwhelmed by them.
I agree with that, but usually, like, if somebody opens up on a show that is a A or B list person, if you can get to them first and get a contract in place, you got to put a hard deposit down, and then that person would have to go to the council and risk getting turned down. But and once they say that guy's name, then all the other promoters know that person's available, and they're going to try to take him.
So for the producer, it's an extra 30 days process to get an approval from council.
Okay.
Commander, pardon my ignorance, because I didn't work any off-duty jobs. I watched too many officers get in trouble with those. But when it comes to staffing, if we used FHP or JSO, I don't know how the interlocal agreement works. Do we pay for them? Are they paid by a COJ when they come and work an off-duty event?
So if we're using them through mutual aid, then their host agency pays. Their agency pays for their salary.
Okay.
If we are opening up off-duty jobs to them, mm-hmm. then they get paid the off-duty rate, and they're working just an off-duty job within their jurisdiction.
Okay. That has to be paid by the. In this case, would be the promoter or whoever.
That's paid by the promoter.
So, have you had any problems in the past getting staffing from outside assistance if you needed it?
It's a tricky question. Yes and no. If the problem becomes, it starts to be. The sheriff's office handles off-duty totally different than we do. We have one off-duty coordinator that handles everything. Mm-hmm. Sheriff's office, you can become your own off-duty coordinator if you coordinate a job. You have to go through the off-duty office, but guys kind of manage their own jobs at different levels. So, yes, it's maintained. Knowledge is maintained, but it's not working through one person like it is with us.
Sure.
Where, you know, Sergeant Sharp is our off-duty coordinator right now. He knows every off-duty job that's going right now. The way that has become successful for us is if we need a sheriff's office off-duty help or Marine Patrol, you know, FHB, anybody like that, he reaches out to contacts from those agencies, and then it goes through him to farm out those.
Yeah, it would seem to me that in the festivals and the smaller ticket events, there wouldn't be that many officers per se. You know, I mean, if you're reaching out for a single squad of sergeant and five officers, I know in JSO they're required to have a supervisor for every five officers that they have working in an event. So, but if you had, to your point, the air show or 4th of July, where you really need an influx of officers, that's a whole different story.
So, and that's one of the things that we've run into over the last year of having to have some of the alcohol establishments covered by the sheriff's office. They have to have two officers at each job, each okay. alcohol establishment where we're only required to have one. Yeah. So difference in policies start to
rub against each other.
Sure. And yes, and so that's what starts to create a lot of problems, and why it's not just a super easy, fast fix of picking up the phone and saying, hey, I need this.
Right, okay.
The number four, the certified accountant, certified public accountant, I agree. The intent behind that was to better track where all the income was coming. There was suspicion that a lot of the sales were kind of done under the table. So they never counted the kegs leaving and the kegs coming in. It was just what they said they sold. And so there was a difference there. And it's to see how much money is going to the nonprofit versus, if I want to be a savvy, what do you call them, event sponsor? If I'm going to be a savvy event sponsor, this is how I would do it to work around that.
But H is dealing with city contracted events. So they wouldn't have
an alcohol. No, I'm number four.
I know, but that's referring to paragraph H, which is city contracted events.
So what about the regular events that the nonprofits are supposed to be getting the?
I don't know. I just know that number four is dealing with H.
Is it the G?
I don't think there is a provision for that for events that are not city contracted.
Because legally they can't get their own liquor license unless it's a nonprofit. And so you have some that do the former nonprofit or they partner with the nonprofit, but the nonprofit never knows it's actually getting all of the receipts, the profit from the liquor sales. And that was a big contention 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And I don't think it's ever been solved.
You're looking to that.
I don't know if it's ever been solved either, but that's not what you're just talking about. And then, but to get a 1, 2, or 3 day alcohol permit, the nonprofit has to go apply for that. It goes through, you have to get your special event permit. Plan approval by planning, then go to Department of Revenue, and then go to DBPR.
Right, so. And it's only the nonprofit that can do that.
Right.
Which is why they tag the nonprofits.
Right, but this one is, would be non-alcoholic events, so I'm not sure really even.
I'm not sure what the.
Going back to number one, is it my turn? So this is for special events which are not a festival. But it's not on here, but something that we're going to be hearing about soon is the limitations on 1 or 2 day special events in high season versus off season. We did it so that we wouldn't have a bunch of festivals during the summer, and I don't disagree with that, but it's March through October. So Deck the Chairs is already in December. January, February is a terrible time to do an outdoor event. So really you're just leaving yourself November. Is that it?
Something's in November because they do it right before Deck the Chairs.
But I'm saying you're
November, February. We have the Seawalk Music Fest, which is 2 days. In March, we have that was a one day.
November's a Supergirl.
And November's a Supergirl. Oktoberfest in October.
Okay, but I'm just saying that restriction really limits. So right now, nobody could do a 2 day event in those time frames because they're already booked.
Yep.
So I think we need to
other than January
add that in as. Either take that out or make it by council approval. All these areas that have council approval, we've never had that level of oversight before.
And I think that was our intent, Mayor, which is why we struck the words, which is not a festival.
So, right, but I'm talking about festivals.
Okay.
So if somebody wanted to do a festival in September,
then we'd bring it to you.
Mm-hmm. Right now, well, I mean, I know we are doing that, but that's not how it's been set up in the past. So
we can write it that way in the policy, though, so yeah, it's more clear.
Okay.
Any other comments for our Parks and Rec team before they start putting together a new draft policy for you all to look at?
Do you have clarity?
Sort of.
They will synthesize everything they heard and come back with a cohesive document.
It's like every year, if you do one, you get it the next year.
That is how the policy is written right now. If you have been an annual event and you've been here more than 2 years, then you get priority. City events get priority as well. But when you're talking about the Sam Beals and those type of people.
So if anyone's going to do it, they're already locked up. I mean, so it's not open to anybody from the outside. And so
no, we have had a couple of new ones pop up, like the R&B Fest. Was this past weekend. She was limited to one day, but we have had a couple that have come through the office that are working with the one-day fest, but I think that they might benefit from two-day in the future.
I'm not a big fan of the grandfathering in of these people. I like to try to figure out a way to open it up to people that could bring something, you know, and think outside the box and doing it as opposed to same stuff every single year.
Sure, I mean, the policy right now also states that you can put an application in up to 365 days in advance. So if you wanted to change it to where, you know, you have to the day, get your application in 1 year in advance to book that weekend, that's a possibility. But then you're running into issues with people getting their deposits in and wanting to pencil in certain things. And, you know, it's up to you. If you want to honor these partnerships that we've been building with these same people over and over again, or if you just want some fresh blood in here.
I mean, personally, I have to find a way to get some fresh people in here and give other people opportunities.
How do you guys feel?
I don't know the right verbiage or how to do it, but I just think some of the relationships have been developed a long time ago, and I don't know. That's necessarily appropriate.
I will say, having been a nonprofit before I was on council, working for a nonprofit and putting on an event, it was nice to know that when we had the event at the Seawalk that we were able to do it again the following year. And as a nonprofit, that was important for us.
Well, it might be good for the nonprofit, but is it the right thing for the community to get the best utilization of the venue?
Well, people in the community like they look forward to a lot of these events.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this month is whatever event it is, and they kind of look forward to it.
Mm. Well, I just hear, God, I wish we had better.
I haven't heard that. We don't talk to the same people.
We don't.
We've identified that already.
I hear it, but I don't know that I'm so willing to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, I kind of like your idea of booking it out in advance, but then again, you know, do we give the nod to the people who are committed to our community first? So, I don't know. That's a tough one.
I wouldn't want to change it. I'd like it the way it is. That's just my opinion.
Spring and the Blues is when? Well, March?
It's the first weekend of April.
First weekend of April. Who has March?
That's Sam as well.
We've got about 5 or 10 minutes left before planning starts up.
My concern is that somebody that has an ongoing grandfathering would work a deal with somebody else to utilize that for them to benefit from that existing relationship, and they would not necessarily be the one running it.
See what you're saying. The way the applications work, though, it's tied to one person.
I understand that.
So you mean if someone came in,
if the value of it becomes more, they can hire another company to
basically contract out
exactly
that spot. I haven't seen that happening. I'm not saying it's not possible, but you know, we've got people on the ground who are working with the producers. We're coming in for meetings. We're writing these permits. I haven't seen that happen, but again, it's not out of the realm of possibility, especially as some of these event producers get older and
I'll give you some more information later.
Yeah.
Since we have less than 5 minutes, I'll just, if you email me who has each month. Because, I mean, I see where Corey's coming from, and I definitely can agree a little bit to it. So I just want to see who has all these festivals, because I know there's multiple producers, but it's nice to get fresh blood in here once a year. It'd be great, but I'll, yeah. So.
Or at least open an opportunity for them to. Yeah.
And can you also look at the surveys that you did on the people who like those different events down there? I know some of them were mentioned multiple times that they.
Our events calendar is not that complicated. I mean, it's regular. Perhaps we could bring to council a list that council wishes to grandfather and make exceptions for, and then everything else we bring back to council for any exception to the policy. Just a suggestion.
I like it.
Anyone else like that concept?
I have an issue with exceptions. It's like picking and choosing.
It changes from council to council, potentially.
But yeah, that's the entire council, so it's not like it's.
Well, I just have a problem with one person controlling
a slot.
Multiple slots of a very, very sought after thing. I don't think that's right. Well, because he's had relationships here for 8 or 10 years.
You know, why don't you just put a cap on how many an individual can have during the course of a year instead of making it more complicated, like one or two?
That's fine, but I'm not opposed to that. I'm just saying, I mean, but somebody shouldn't be grandfathered into multiple events annually to tie everything up. I mean, they're doing that to make, to make a profit.
Spring and Blues is something that should be grandfathered in if we ever talk about it, because it's something that a lot of people I know look forward to. Now the other festivals, I think that's up for grabs. So,
I hear you guys. We'll get with the committee and talk about some options and bring some language to you to see what you think. Sorry.
Thank you.
We're here for you.
Thank you, Terry. I have no miscellaneous items for you tonight. Any committee assignment report outs that any councilors have for the other councilors while you're here?
No, just make a note that I signed up to take Chet's spot in the Florida League of Cities on land use and economics, I think it was. So I'll be getting my feet wet, I think, next month or something like that. So.
I was notified.
September 16th is the first.
Yeah, I was notified that I was put on the Municipal Administration Committee again. So I'll be doing that one again.
The best. You're taxation.
Finance and taxation. Future briefing topics. I know we've got a couple on there planned coming up in the next few months. One of the big ones we have is further discussion on the second Height open house that we had, to see if council wants to move forward with anything in particular and to discuss what the results of that were. I do know that Ms. Ireland has started to look at the calendar for bookings for the comp plan, and starting in October, I believe, is when those will kick in. And just having a brief conversation with the mayor, sometime after the new council gets seated in November, we'll have a briefing probably end of November, beginning of December, to have a conversation about whether or not the council wants to change up any of the meetings and briefing times and starts.
We also still have to meet about chat seat.
That was added. You should have got an email from Chris Wright. We're just going to do a quick meeting right before the budget's or. First budget.
Budget. Oh, so
first budget.
Yeah, the first budget.
Start at
5:30. 5:30, and then the budget.
And then the budget meeting starts at
5:45.
And 15 minutes is going to be enough time?
It will be enough time for the first conversation.
Yeah, I believe that at a previous meeting, you had all asked the mayor to come up with a proposal, and so she's going to put her proposal forward.
She's going to propose.
She's going to propose. So 15 minutes, that should do it. That's it.
For a future briefing topic,
yes.
I heard this Monday night, that there that a lot of my fellow council members would like to find a legal path forward with the VLSC. Is that something that we would want to have a briefing on?
I think it has to be more of a shade meeting.
Yeah, I think, well, we're in litigation with it right now, right?
Do we have, I mean, do we have any input from you, Sandy, on that?
Well, I've heard that as well, and I've spoken with Cliff Shepherd, our outside counsel, and we are prepared to have a meeting if you would like to have one to discuss some of the options. Many of them will be options you've already heard, but certainly we'd be happy to go through them again with you.
Would that be a shade meeting or a...
No, it's not necessarily a shade meeting. Yes.
I was just saying, I mean, I just think the process, the way it is with the lawsuits and stuff, we just gotta wait till everything falls into place and then try to, then we can figure out where we are from a negotiation standpoint.
Right.
But, I mean, my whole thing is we've got to make sure the city does not, is not violating the law.
Right. Well, as you know, we made some proposals to VLSC before they actually instituted a lawsuit. So some of those items could be discussed again. If they propose something in settlement for their litigation, that would be a shade meeting. But right now we'd just be talking about some of the options that were available to us earlier in the year that remain available to us right now. So that's how we parse it out.
So there'd be no new information?
From my perspective, you're correct, no new information. Just putting it out more detail, perhaps, answering more questions that are more pointed to an option, but it sounds very much like many of the options that have already been discussed one way or the other with council, and I know directly with VLSC at an earlier point in time.
I think it would help to have it all aggregated together and us discuss it as a group versus us discussing it one-on-one with you or Mike. So I think just having us in a group being able to discuss it
yeah,
would be better.
I found that helpful Monday night. I mean, to at least have heard what
I think it should be a little bit further down the road. I feel like with the pending litigation and active trials or potential active trials in the near future, it might be a little premature to start discussing what we can offer. That's just my opinion. I think we should. I just think it should be later on in the year.
So what I'm understanding, though, the question isn't what we would offer, but simply lay out what are viable legal options available for us to take if they're agreeable. Yeah, not that it's an offer per se.
Right.
So if there is an offer from the VLSC that is either duplicative or different, we would discuss that in shade meeting, not out loud.
I just feel like maybe the outcome of, for an example, what Judge Deering might decide could change that. So yes. That's why I would rather wait to see what the courts have to say before we start entering into a briefing and discussion. That's just me. But
well, this will be after that decision
right.
is made. Because it's
well, that's, I would just use that one as an example. We have right. several litigations that are pending. So.
I think one of the issues is the public doesn't think we're doing anything, and that they don't think we're talking about any possible solutions. So they don't understand that there have been offers. So if we have a meeting that kind of discusses what we have done, they don't think that we're just trying to close our eyes and block our ears and let Mike, you know, run roughshod over the whole city. Because that's not what's happening, but that's how it's being perceived, because nothing is being discussed in public because we have to do it together at a meeting.
Right, but I think the problem is we're going to have to do it in a shade meeting, and they're going to say we're hiding stuff, we're plotting against them anyway.
No, it wouldn't be a shade meeting, it would be an open meeting. But what will be discussed is all the stuff that we've discussed in the past. So
it's been discussed one-on-one.
Right.
And so this would be an opportunity
being discussed,
to...
But it's
right.
new to the public.
Right.
It's not new to the VLSC, it's not new to us, but it would be new to the public. And new to us would be how we hear other people reacting to those prior proposals.
So my point is just, Cliff and I have spoken about it after hearing this question, and he's not opposed he doesn't feel like the litigation would be substantially jeopardizing. Of course, we can always stop the discussion if we see it trending that way, but just as a topical conversation, he believes that can be done, and as you've already intimated, it won't be many things that are new, if anything new.
Great, let's do it. When do we have time?
I'll look to the availability of the schedule.
I'll have to look at the calendar.
Yeah.
If you...
I don't want to do it, if you don't want to do it.
I do, because the public needs to know that we're not just sitting on our hands.
Well,
I think it should be done, but I think it should be after, again, I'm going to stand my ground on, I think it should be further on down the road. The public will know, and the time will come. And I believe that we should come together, and just, I think we should see the outcome of the litigation first. That's going to kind of set some path. If not, you're talking about gingerly walking on a fine line. What happens if you step over it, you know? So.
But this is after the initial piece of the ballot. This meeting would be after that, because that's being decided on Thursday.
Well, there's more than one, and some that we can't discuss right now, right?
Correct.
I think it's a dangerous road until the litigation is done. That's what I think. That's just my personal opinion. That's my.
Well, I mean, so far there's three of us who would support it.
I have enough faith in our lawyers that they'll see if we're going too close to an edge, and they'll stop it.
Fernando, your thoughts?
Why do I got to be the decided one?
We're not voting on anything. I just
like to hear. No, conversation's good. I just want to see what happens after Thursday.
Okay. So bring it back in the next briefing to discuss again.
I mean, I can bring it up at the next briefing, and we can talk about it again.
There.
Yeah.
I love talking about talking.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you all. Yeah.